Morning, today's daf in Shabbos Kuf Tes Zion. We are starting today on the very bottom of Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom with the words Tanu Rabbanan. Yesterday we had the schus of starting the 16th parak of Maseches Shabbos, in which we are discussing various concerns that Chachamim had, specifically the house is on fire. House is on fire and there is no life that is in jeopardy. So under those circumstances, putting out the fire would be an Isser. We discussed briefly yesterday what kind of Isser would putting out the fire be. Would it be an Isser deraisa, an Isser derabanan? Presumably, it is hinging on the question of Malacha Shein Tzricha Lagufa. We discussed that briefly yesterday. The Chachamim were concerned that the more actively you are involved in salvaging all your material possessions from the house, so the more you're going to lose your mind and you're going to want to be tempted to put out the fire. So therefore, the Chachamim placed a cap on the items that can be taken out of your house. The first topic of discussion, which we discussed yesterday, was the Kisvei HaKodesh. The Chachamim allowed Kisvei HaKodesh to be taken out of the house. Where can it be taken to? So we touched on this briefly yesterday. We're going to be discussing it in more detail at the end of today's shiur, going into tomorrow's shiur. So we'll reserve that discussion. We'll hold off on that until we get to the Mishnah a little bit upcoming. Yesterday's Gemara was dedicated to really a very legal discussion in terms of what follows, what is under the guidelines, under the parameters of Kisvei Kodesh. Sifrei Tanakh are falling under the category of Kisvei Kodesh, that we understand. But within Sifrei Tanakh, the Gemara had a number of questions to ask. The Gemara asked yesterday three questions in particular. One was that there, if the Sefer Tanakh is written in other languages other than Lashon HaKodesh, so would it have the status of being a Sefer, the Sifrei Kodesh, Kisvei Kodesh, in which one could take it out of the house? So that was question number one. That was working within the position that you're not allowed to write Kisvei Kodesh in other languages. There is an opinion that you are allowed to write Kisvei Kodesh in other languages, but according to the Mandam, it says that you're not allowed to, and you shouldn't have written it, but now that you did, can it be salvaged? So that was a machlokes yesterday between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Rav Huna said it's usher. Rav Chista said it would be mutter. Second question that we asked yesterday is, let's say it's not Kisvei Kodesh, but rather Sidurim and Kameim that have selections of Psukim in there. Do they have the status of Kisvei Kodesh? The Gemara asked yesterday. The Gemara's answer is definitively no, they do not. A third question yesterday is that, let's say it is written in Lashon HaKodesh, but it's not written in permanent ink. It's not written in D.O., but it's written in some other type of liquid which can be used as an ink, but is not permanent. Would it have the status of Kisvei Kodesh? So those are the questions that the Gemara entertained yesterday. The Gemara then went on to discuss what is the base minimum amount of a sefer in order to have the status of being Kisvei Kodesh. And 85 letters was the answer yesterday. How do we arrive at the answer of 85 letters? Because the shortest parsha in the Torah, Vayhi ben Soar Aron, which is in Parshas Baloscha, so that contains therein 85 letters. So therefore, 85 letters becomes the base minimum amount. So that means to say that if I have, obviously not the entire Sefer Torah, the entire Sefer Torah has hundreds and thousands of letters. I didn't do the research before, but it's over 300,000 letters in a regular Sefer Torah. So, but if you only have a section of it which only has 85 letters, so that is going to be now considered Kisvei Kodesh, in which you're going to be able to salvage it because that is the shortest amount. Now, these 85 letters, do they have to be contiguous within a section of the Sefer Torah? Can they be scattered throughout the Sefer Torah? So that was the last question that we dealt with yesterday. Also, machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Rav Huna says that they have to be contiguous and they have to be within one area, and Rav Chista says that they can be scattered throughout the Sefer Torah. With all that stated, the Gemara now is going to turn its attention to Vayhi ben Soar. You open up a Sefer Torah and you look in the parsha of Vayhi ben Soar, so you will notice that it is sectioned off from the rest of the Torah. Almost like parentheses are placed in the words Vayhi ben Soar. Now, the Torah does not make use of such citations of a quotation mark or parentheses or any kind of punctuation. What we have in the Sefer Torah are nuns inverted, turned upside down, and bracketing off the area of Vayhi ben Soar. So those two psukim are actually bracketed off with an upside down nun. Just as a point of interest, by the way, the Gemara itself, which now is going to be discussing this phenomena, actually never mentions that they are upside down nuns. The Gemara just talks about putting simonim, putting some sort of signal, some sort of marker. So it's interesting that we use the upside down nun. There must be obviously significance to the upside down nun, but the Gemara itself does not actually make reference to what you're using in order to bracket off this area. With that stated, we begin the Gemara, and Tana Rabbanan, we are on the very bottom of Kuf Tetzvav Amud Beis. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when dictating the Torah, instructed that we are to make signs in front of it and at the end of it. Marks noting that these are a separate area of the Torah. And the reason why, according to the first opinion of this Braisa, is because this is not the rightful place of Vayhi Ben Soha. Vayhi Ben Soha, Aaron is talking about when the Aaron is being lifted and being transported. Where should it belong? So the Gemara does not make that point clear, but Rashi certainly does. Rashi on the top of the Amud, he writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. It doesn't belong here. Because we're not talking about the transportation and the marchings of the Jewish people. However, when talking about the formation of the Jewish people, which is at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, so there, that's where it should have been stated, because we're talking about the formation and how we're moving, and so we're talking about how each degel, each flag, which is made up of three shvatim, is moving in the campaign, and so you have the first degel, the second degel, and then you have the Aron moving, and then you have the third degel, and then you have the fourth degel. So clearly what you have over there is the appropriate place in which Vayehi Ben Soha should have been written, but it wasn't written over there. It was moved over here. So the first opinion says that the reason why it's bracketed off is because it doesn't belong earlier, but rather belongs here. So obviously the question becomes, well, if it belongs earlier, so why isn't it earlier? So let's hold off on that for just a little bit. Rebbe Omer Lo Min Hashem, who's that? Rebbe says, no, that's not it. Rebbe disagrees with that fundamentally. Rashi writes over here, Lo Min Hashem Uzer, Lo Zeh Hashem Shotame Asemanios. Meaning, of course, Rebbe agrees that there are markings around the Pesuk in Vayehi Ben Soha to tell us that it's separate, but it's not because it's out of place. De Mekomahu, the truth of the matter is, it's fine. De Parshazu B'tchelas Masa Shanasu Mehar Sinai. Because there was a campaign, a march that was beginning at that point in time, and that was their exiting of Har Sinai. So Vayehi Ben Soha should have been placed right there. It does belong there. So rather than why are there simanias over there? Because it is an independent sefer. In other words, it is chashuv, it is significant to be an independent sefer. Now that doesn't really explain why then brackets are there, meaning it's an independent sefer, that part we understand. But the idea that it really does belong there, and so why are nuns over there? So we don't really get a full explanation by Rabbi. It just simply Sefer Chashuvu Bifnei Atzmo. It's its own independent section. So we have now a machlokus amongst the Tanaim, exactly why it is that the Nun Hafuchos, the upside down Nuns, are bracketing these two Pesukim over there. So the first opinion of the Braisa is because it's out of place, it doesn't belong there, it belongs back in the Degalim. Masha'inkin, according to Shitas Rebbe, it's to teach us the Chashivas of that section. Gemara continues, Kaman Azlaha Damar of Shmuel Bar Nachman Amar of Yonasan. The Gemara quotes a statement of Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar of Yonasan, and the Gemara wants to know, is he going within the position of the Tanakama or that of Rebbe? Well, first let's learn what he said. Based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, Chatzvah Mudah Shiva'ah, that there are seven pillars, Elu Shiva Sifra Torah. So that means to say that there are not Chamishi Chumshe Torah, but rather there are Shiva Chumshe Torah, which I know is not the best way to say it, because a Chumash by definition means a fifth. But the idea is that there really are seven chumashim. Okay, I'll say it even though I know it's not the best way to say it. There are seven chumashim. So the Gemara says, Kaman ka Rebbe. So obviously he's following the position of Rebbe. Meaning once you have the Parsha Vayehi Ben Soha as its own independent sefer, so what does that mean? Now let's count it up. We have Breish Yishmos Vayikra, that's three. Now we have Bamidbar Pre Vayehi Ben Soha, that's four. Then you have the Parsha Vayehi Ben Soha, that's five. Then you have the post-Bamidbar Vayehi Ben Soha, that's six. And then you have Sefer Dvarim, comes out to seven. So fine, so now that means to say now that there are seven. What now becomes the significance of that? So in a moment, I will suggest. I'm not going to suggest, but I'm going to cite. Mantan de Palagala de Rebbe. Now who argues with Rebbe? Shimon Gamliel, he de Tanya. And the Gemara notes that in the Braisa we learned the Tanakama's viewpoint, But can we associate a Tana with that viewpoint? The Gemara says, yes, we can. And that's the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer. I see the Parsha Zu, Shitei Aker Mikan, Visika Sev Bimkoma. What's going to end up happening is that this Parsha is going to be uprooted from over here, and it's going to be put back in its original place. V'lama Kasva Kan, so why then was it moved over here? Kedei Lahafsik Bein Peronis Rishona, LePeronis Shnia. And the reason why it was put over here was it was moved from its rightful place is in order to create a break in the Peronios. There's a Peronios Rishona, there's a Peronios before, there's a Peronios afterwards. And so in order to break up the Peronios, the catastrophes, the calamities that befell the Jewish people, so Vayihimen so was taken out of its rightful place, which should have gone the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar by the listing of the way, the formation of the Jewish people, moved over here to break up the calamities. Now, Peronios Shnia Ma'iva Hiyam Kimis Onanim. Now, as far as what are the two calamities it's breaking up, so you open up the Parshas Baloscha, you look over there, and you note that immediately after Vayihi Ben Sora, so you have the nation that are complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that it's clear what the Peronios are after Vayihi Ben Sora. Peronios Rishona Vayisume Harashem. So the Gemara says, but if you look prior to that, what exactly was the calamity that befell the Jewish people prior to Vayihi Ben Sora? It's not clear in the Psukim. In other words, if you look carefully over there, what you're going to see is that the Jewish people are just simply exiting Har Sinai. They're leaving Har Sinai. Vayisumay Hashem. Now, the Amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina Shesor Me'achori Hashem, and Rav Chama Bar Chanina Darshan's the Pasuk, and that is Shesaru, that they were leaving Me'achori Hashem. Now, exactly what does that mean? So the Gemara itself is not particularly clear. So first, let's cite Rashi. Rashi over here notes what exactly were the Peronios before Vayihi Ben Sora. So the Gemara just gives some sort of vague reference to they moved away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They left HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rashi over here writes, Me'achori Hashem, B'soch yamim lemasam, hit'avu asafsuf ta'ava, le'itrayim al-basar kedei limrod b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That within the 3 days before they left Har Sinai, they already wanted meat. They were complaining about the meat, and they rebelled against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what Rashi is doing over here is something very interesting. The Rashi over here is citing the following. If you look after the Parsha of Vayihi Ben Sora, so there really are two back-to-back episodes of devastation that befell the Jewish people. First, there was the Parsha of Misonanin, a very brief Parsha about just simply a group of people that were complaining against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then you had the Asaf Suf, a group of Bnei Yisrael who were complaining because they did not feel that they had that their diet was a good diet and they weren't eating enough meat. And so what Rashi's doing over here is he's taking that second episode and he's saying that really historically it belongs beforehand, meaning that section should really come before Vayihi Ben Sora. And what the Vayihi Ben Sora is doing is now breaking up those two sections. That is the way Rashi is understanding it. Now, this is Rashi being consistent with his general position, Ein Mukta Mumucha B'Torah, that there is no chronology in the Torah. The Torah does not give us the episodes as they occurred sequentially in the Midbar. And so you could very much have the Torah reporting the Asaf Suf after the episode of Misonanim. And meanwhile, historically, it could have happened beforehand. So fine. But it's interesting, however, because for Rashi, the whole point of Vayihi Ben Sora was to break it up. And meanwhile, as the Torah itself presents it, it's the Parsha of Vayihi Ben Sora, followed then by the Parsha of Misonanim, followed then by the Parsha of Asaf Suf. So even though historically it happened earlier, but if the whole point of the Torah writing is to break it up, so even in the way the Torah writes it, it doesn't break it up. The Torah then puts the two episodes of Misonanim and Asaf Suf back to back. So it's certainly very interesting the way Rashi presents it. And it is admittedly difficult to understand, because then why would the Torah then put it afterwards if the whole point of Vayihi Ben Sora is to break it up? Anyway, that's Rashi. You take a look at Tosos over here. Tosos cites Rashi. Tosos disagrees with Rashi. Tosos has a different understanding of what the Peronios were prior to Vayihi Ben Sora. He quotes the Medrash, Tosos third line down, the first Tosos. So, Kedam Rebbe Medrash Vayisu Shenasu Me HaRashem Derech Shoshes Yamim Ketino Kayotze Mi Beis HaSefer Shoborech Lo Vaholech Lo Kachayu Borchim Me Har Sinai Derech Shoshes Yamim Lefi Shilimdu Har Bitar B'Sinai Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nismach Peronios L'Peronios Lav Ela Nifsuk Parsha Vayihi Ben Sora Aron. Quoting the Medrash, Tosos cites that what the Jewish people were doing were basically running away from Har Sinai. And Har Sinai, they heard a lot of mitzvahs, a lot of halachas, a lot of rules, regulations, restrictions. And the Jewish people said, okay, enough. We don't want to hear anymore. And so what they were doing was not leaving Har Sinai, but they were rather fleeing from Har Sinai, running away from Har Sinai. Like a child, the Medrash says it very clearly, like a child who's running away from Beis Sefer, right, from the yeshiva, he doesn't want to hear anymore. And so that was the Jewish people, that was the description the Medrash gives to the Jewish people about leaving Har Sinai. That's the Paranis Rishona, and then the Paranis Shnia, as presented, is the Parsha Misonanim, immediately following Vayib and Soa. For a slightly modified viewpoint of the Tosos, see the Ramban and Chumash. Ramban and Chumash basically aligns himself with this position of Tosfos, but then he asks a subsequent question. He gives a wonderful answer. He says, well, if that's true, if the whole point of Ehim and Soa is to break up the Parnas Rishona, which is they're fleeing Har Sinai, and break it up from the next Parsha, Vayiam Kimisonanim, the Jewish people complaining, and the whole purpose of breaking it up, Tosfos says, well, that's a little bit strange, because what do you find immediately after the Misonanim? You find the Asaf Suf, meaning that you do find in that very Parsha, immediately following Vayiv and Soa, two catastrophes back to back, the Parsha of Misonanim and the Parsha of Asaf Suf. So why isn't there anything to break that up? So the Ramban and Chumash answers that if the Torah would have strung together three calamities, the fleeing from Har Sinai, the Parsha Misonanim, the Parsha Asaf Suf, so what you end up with is a chazakah of calamities. The Ramban says is that the interest of Vayhi Bin Soa is to break up the chazakah. So it's true that immediately after Vayhi Bin Soa you have two episodes, but in the very least, however, now you don't have a chazakah, as Vayhi Bin Soa broke up the chazakah. That's the Ramban on Chumash. See the Ramban inside for slightly more details on it, but that's basically the Ramban. And one other point before we continue in the Gemara, and that is in his introduction to Sefer Bamidbar. The Netziv cites this Gemara over here in his introduction to every one of the Chumashim. The Netziv writes a very short introduction to every one of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and the Netziv cites our Gemara over here, as obviously it's relevant to Sefer Bamidbar, and the Netziv notes now the significance of Vayehi Ben Soa, specific to Sefer Bamidbar. So I'm just shortly outlining his basic point, his basic thesis, and that is that prior to Vayehi Ben Soa, there was a way that that B'nai Yisrael were going to go into Eretz Yisrael, B'derech Hanes, L'mala Min HaTeva. They were just simply going to march into Eretz Yisrael, and they wouldn't have to fight any battles, and they wouldn't have to fight a war, etc., etc. That was plan A in terms of how the Jewish people are going to go into Eretz Yisrael. And then you have Vayehi Ben Soa, there in the end of the 10th parak of Sefer Bamidbar, and immediately following, you have now plan B. The Netziv says that the purpose of Vayehi Ben Soa is to break it up in order to tell us that there was an ideal of how we were going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and then there was the plan B. Plan B, Derech HaTeva. We're going to go in the way any nation goes into a land in order to conquer the land, with spies, meraglim, and with reconnaissance, and with an army, and with fighting, and milchama, and we're going to go in, Derech HaTeva, in the natural order. And the Netziv goes on to explain why it is that we move from plan A to plan B, and Vayehi Ben Soa is serving to break up those two sections, because those were two different ways in which we were going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, see the Netziv in his introduction to Sefer Bamidbar. We are going to continue in the Gemara. Ibailahu. Halgilyonim shel Sefer Torah. I don't know if I read it, but anyway, Vehechem Ekama Amrav Ashi B'Degalim. And its rightful place belongs back in the Degalim. Okay, just in case I didn't read that. Let's continue in the Gemara. Ibailu, the Gemara now asks the following question. We're going back to the Sefer Torah, and once again, we are going to be analyzing what exactly is within the scope of Kisvei HaKodesh. The Gemara's question over here now is going to revolve around the margins of the Sefer Torah. Ibailu, Hagiyonim, Shol Sefer Torah, Masil Nasam, Ibn Adleika, Ein Masil Nasam, Ibn Adleika. And as Rashi explains over here, what the Gemara is asking is, you have the margins, and that's all you have. Every column of the Sefer Torah has got margins, empty space, that is to the right and to the left, and to the top and to the bottom. And so now, do these empty spaces in of themselves, do they have Kedusha? And are they going to be able to be salvaged from a burning house? Tashma, the Gemara cites the following. We're going to go through four different brises that are going to seemingly discuss this topic, And the Gemara is going to try to prove him from any one of these brises. Brisa number one. Sefer Torah Shabbalah. Im yesh bo lalakish monim v'chamish osios kegon parsha v'hi mitzoharon matzilin v'im la v'im matzilin. So if a Sefer Torah is worn down, and you do not have the 85 letters that make up the base minimum amount of Kisvei HaKodesh, like the Parsha Vayhi Mitzoah, so then you can salvage it, but if not, you cannot salvage it. Ve'amai. Now, after citing the Brisa, so the Gemara asks a very simple question, Tepeklei Mishum Gilyon Didei. Now, wait 1 second. The letters have been worn out. Okay, fine, the letters have been worn out. What are you left with? You're left with parchment. And can't we now argue that the parchment in of itself is going to be cause enough to be able to salvage it from the burning house? So the Gemara says, no, Balashani. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Because if there was ksav over there, but it worn out, so then the ksav that lies underneath does not have kedusha. Meaning that's not our question, that's not our discussion. Our discussion is on the margins that surround the ksav. But over here, if we're talking about the cloth that the ksav was actually on, where the letters wore out, so then it no longer has kedusha that everybody agrees to. Rashi writes over here. I'm reading the Rashi. Balashani, dekevin shabala afa gilyon bato, that the cloth underneath is also going to be devoid of any kedusha. V'chimi ba'ilei shal gilyonim kayamim el shaksav halach. See once the letters go, the cloth that's underneath no longer retains any of the kedusha. The Gemara says that we understood. We're asking about the margins that are surrounding the ksav. Tashma, the Gemara now brings the second brisa. Sefer Torah shenimchak. If a Sefer Torah becomes erased, im yesh bo lakish monim v'chamish osios kegon parsha v'hi mitzoha aron matzilin, v'im lav ein matzilin. So if there are the base minimum 85 letters, so then you can save it, otherwise you can't. V'amai, the Gemara now wants to know, tepek lemishim gilyon didei. And again, what about the parchment? The Gemara says, makum haksav lo kami bailei. And the Gemara over here reiterates the point. We're not talking about the makom haksav. Dechi kadosh agav ksavu dekadosh. It only becomes sanctified because of the letters that are on top of it. Azo ksav azla la kedusha. Kedusha say. Once the letters go, the kedusha goes as well. We're not talking about the cloth that's directly under the letters. They're only going to have kedusha by virtue of the fact that they have the ksav on top of them. Ksav goes, the kedusha goes. But we're talking about the margins that surround. The margins that surround are servicing the area, but there are no letters on them. So do they gain a kedusha in themselves? That's the question. And we've yet to answer the question. Ki kami baile. And the Gemara just simply articulates that this is the question. Ki kami baile, shamala v'shamata shebein parsha la parsha. We're talking about the margins that are above, that are below, that are between the parsha, shebein daf la daf. Between the columns, Shibitzchilas Sefer, Shibitzofa Sefer, the beginning of every Sefer, the end of the Sefer, every Sefer, there is more margin area that's left over. So the Gemara says that's what we're asking about, and question has not yet been addressed. V'tepikle Mishamahu. So the Gemara says, okay, so I don't understand. So you have now just a remnant of a Parsha. Let's say you have a small section of the Sefer Torah in the burning house, and let's say it doesn't have 85 letters. Let's say it has 84 letters. Okay, so by the letter count, it does not meet the requirement. It doesn't meet the criteria. The Gemara says, okay, but I don't understand. It's got margins, meaning if you're arguing that the margins in of themselves retain the Kedusha and therefore allow for salvaging, so even if the Parsha has 84 letters, so what? The margins around them should be now enough of a cause in order to be able to save them. So the Gemara's answer is the guy's Vishade. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the brises that we were describing were about a very specific scenario, notably that there were no margins. There were no margins that were that were on top, on the bottom. They were all cut out. And the only thing you're left with is just simply the cloth that has the letters on it. And now the only thing that can salvage it is only if there are 85 letters, and therefore only the 85 letters is going to be allowed to save from the fire. Again, the Gemara is not saying that this is absolutely so. It's just that we're giving an ukimta, so at least we don't have now a definitive answer to the question of what is the status of the margins. We are now here in round 3, Tashma. Hagiyonam shamala v'shamata mishabein parsha l'parsha shabein daf l'daf shibitzchilas sefer shibitzof sefer mitamim es hayadayim. That when you have the margins that are on the top and the bottom between parshios, between columns, at the beginning of sefer, the end of the sefer, so they are going to be subject to the gzera derabanan atumas yadayim. We go back to the first parak of Masechet Shabbos. We learned Yud Ches Davar 18 gzeras that were enacted by by Beis Shammai and eventually agreed to by Beis Hillel. One of them is that if you touch a Sefer Torah, your hands are going to be a sheni l'tuma. And we discussed it back then in terms of why that should be. I'm not going to go over it right now. In the meantime, however, you have to be touching Kisvei HaKodesh. And here, the Braisa says very clearly that if you're touching the margins, that is tantamount to touching Kisvei Kodesh, and therefore your hands are going to be tamei. It does fall under the Gzeirah D'Rabbanan of Tumas Yadayim. And so it's pretty clear over here. Admittedly, it's another arena of halacha, but it's pretty clear over here that the Gilyonos, the margins, do in fact have Kedusha. So the Gemara says, Doma Agav Sefer Torah Shani. The Gemara says, I don't think it's a wonderful proof. Because over there, what are you doing? You're touching the margins of a Sefer Torah that has a Sefer Torah on it. So yes, while the Sefer Torah is on it, the reason why Tumas Yadayim is because the margins are there to facilitate the Ksav that is in the center. So there, your hands are going to become Tamei, and it does fall under the category of Tumas Yadayim, but only because at that point in time, the margins are servicing the Ksav. Over here, with our question is that if the margins and all you have are the margins by themselves, is that enough to be able to salvage it? That's our question. And the question is still unanswered. Tashma, this is now round 4. Hagiyonim is different. Mina min matzil al samim ne'adleikim. You have the margins, or if you have a sefer written by heretics. We will be discussing that more in today's daf. But right now, the author of this particular sefer Torah is a heretic, is a mean. Rashi described him as an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So, ein matzil al samim ne'adleikim, you don't say them. Let them burn, let them burn, let the even if they have Shem Hashem over there. But because of the authorship of who particularly wrote the Sefer Torah, so therefore it does not have any Kedusha whatsoever, and let it burn. And the Braisa says, and that includes not only the Sefer Minim, but also Gilyonim as well. So the Gemara says, my love Gilyonim, the Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, now we're saying the margins, aren't we talking about the margins of a Sefer Torah? The Gemara says, no, lo Gilyonim, the Sefer Minim. So we're talking about the margins of Sifrei Minim, meaning that the Braisa over here is not describing two different cases. The Braisa here is describing the margins of Sifrei Minim. That is what is allowed to be burned. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. Hashta Sifrei Minim Gufayu Ein Matzilim Gilyonim Mibayi? Gemara says, I really don't understand. In the Braisa we learn that if Mamsh, the Sefer Torah itself written by a Min, by a heretic, if that Sefer Torah is going to be burned, and even the Shem Hashem that's written in the Sefer Torah is going to be burned, so at that point in time, can't we easily have concluded on our own that the margins are to be burnt as well? Why would the Braisa need to make that as a separate point, as if it's teaching me something? Once I know the Sefer Torah is burnt, once I know Shem Hashem of the Sefer Torah of a Min is to be allowed to be burnt, so then obviously the Gilyonos, the margins are to be burnt as well. There's no Chiddush over there. So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar. The Gemara says, no. Sifrei Minim Harehin Ki Gilyonim. No, the pshat in the Braisa is that the Sifrei Minim are going to be like the Gilyonim. That means to say that the Braisa is making an equivalency, that the Sifrei Minim, the Sifrim that are written by heretics, are going to be like the margins, meaning just like the margins don't have any Kedusha, neither do the Sifrei Minim have any Kedusha. It seems to be, the Gemara has now ended this discussion, it seems to be that the Gemara's conclusion, although the Gemara is not absolute in its conclusion, is that the Gemara seems to suggest that the Gilyonim in of themselves do not retain the Kedusha of Kisvei Kodesh, cannot be saved from a Deleika, although, again, not absolutely confirmed that that's the Gemara's conclusion, but the Gemara went 4 rounds trying to prove whether or not the margins in of themselves have the status of Kisvei Kodesh. We mentioned in this 4th Braisa the idea of Sifrei Minim. The Gemara now is going to use this as an opportunity to discuss in more detail Sfarim that are written by heretics. Now, when I say Sfarim, I mean a Sefer Torah. Meaning, obviously, their own works obviously has no Kedusha. That goes beyond saying. But we're talking about a Sefer Torah that they authored. So here now we're going to be quoting the Braisa, and we're going to be quoting the Braisa in full. So first, the Tanakhama's viewpoint, which we already saw, is that the Sifrei Minim are not to be saved from a fire, meaning they have no Kedusha whatsoever, and there's no need to salvage them. Rabbi Yossi Amar Bechol Kodar Saskar Shebehem V'gozizan V'ashar Sofen. Rabbi Yossi says, well, if this were a weekday, so here's what you would do. You would cut out Shem Hashem in the Sefer Torah that's written by a man. You would put the Shem Hashem in Geniza, and the rest of it you're allowed to be burned. Amar Rabbi Tarfon says, Akapeach is B'ni. It's a very strong language. It basically, I'm not translating literally, but it basically means I'm so confident about what I'm about to say. Rabbi Tarfon says that they have no kedusha whatsoever. And forget about just leaving it in a fire and allowing it to be burnt. I would actively burn a Sefer Torah written by a man. I would burn it. I would burn the Shem Hashem in them. Shemahen Shafila Adam Rodef Acharav Lahargo Benachash Rat Lahachisho. And just to show you how clear I am about my position, a person is being chased by a snake, and he's going to bite you, and your life is in jeopardy. Nichnas lebeis avodazar veinichnas lebatem she'elu. It would be better to go to a house of idolatry rather than to step in to any one of these heretics' house in order to be safe from the snake. Now, that doesn't mean he is not condoning going into a house of avodah zarah, right? In fact, you can make an argument that going into a house of avodah zarah would fall under the category of yaharig val yavor. Now, I'm not saying that absolutely. I'm just simply saying he's just using that as a baseline to make his point. Meaning, it's better to go into a house of avodah zarah, which perhaps you shouldn't even go into, rather than going into the houses of the min, of these minim, of these heretics. Now, by the way, it's clear in the context of our Gemara over here that these minim that we're describing right now, these heretics, are Jews who went off the derech, meaning that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah obviously are not Jewish to begin with. But these minim, which Rabbi Tarfon is really vehemently opposed to, so obviously they must be a group of Jews who are heretical and went off the derech. We'll discuss a little bit more about that also later in this daf. Shalalu makirim v'kofrim v'alalu ein makirim v'kofrim. And Rabbi Tarfon notes the difference, that these groups, the minim that we're describing right now, they know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they know about the Sefer Torah, they acknowledge to a certain degree Torah Misinai, and yet they deny. Halalu, just stam over the Avodah Zarah, ain't makirim v'kofrim. Meaning, yeah, they're over the Avodah Zarah, but how much do they really believe in it? In other words, they're practicing, fine, but they don't really believe in it. They're not as bad as the minim. V'alei makas of Omer, and Rabbi Tarfon still now going on about how seriously he feels about the minim. It says in Sefer Yeshayahu, V'achadels v'amezuzah shemei zichronech, that the after the door and after the mezuzah in which you die, that will be your remembrance. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Kavachomer, Ma umal la'aso shalom in ish li'ishto amar Torah, shemishenichto v'kdusha yimacha al hamayim, halalu shematilim kina ve'eva, v'tachris ben yisrael la'avim shebashamayim lo al achas kama v'chama. So, and Rabbi Shmuel, who's in perfect alignment and agreement with Rabbi Tarfon, that says that really what you should be doing is that you should be burning the Sifrei Torah of Minim and burning Shem Hashem as well. He says, I'll give you a model, meaning if there is discord between husband and wife to the point where they go to the Beis HaMikdash, accusations of her infidelity. So what you can do under the circumstances, not what you can do, what you're supposed to do, is burn the Parsha Sota, not burn it, sorry. Put it in the water in order to destroy the parsha, which has Shem Hashem in it. And so, in order to try to create either shalom, being ish l'ishto, or the alternative, of course, is that she will die. But in any event, in order to facilitate shalom, so Shem Hashem can be destroyed, over here, where you're taking a group of people who are turning the Jewish people away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So for sure, what you could do with their Sefer Torah is you could destroy them, even Shem Hashem as well. V'alei mamar David. And on that, David said, Halom esanecha Hashem esaneh, that those that hate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I myself will hate, uv'sekom amecha iskotate, I will fight with them. Tach l'sinasem lo'ivim hayuli. The utmost hatred that I have for these enemies. So the Rabbi Yishmael is assigning this pasuk in Tehillim regarding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's absolute hatred with these groups of Jews who are not only abandoned but trying to bring other Jews to their side and are corrupting the Torah, and Rabbi Yishmael says this pasuk is a perfect description of the group that we're talking about. Ukeshem shem asil masam and made like a kachem asil masam lo min apolos. And you don't save the Sifrei Torah of a min, not from a fire, not from a fallen in house, not from water, and not from anything that would possibly destroy them. Meaning, let it be destroyed under all circumstances. Okay, Adkan. That is the Braisa. Now, in its totality, So clearly what we have over here is a discussion of the Sfarim of Minim, of these heretics, sectarian groups, right? We could guess in terms of with the groups that the Gemara over here is describing and making reference to. The Gemara, in just a bit, I'll highlight in just a moment that we don't necessarily have to guess, but I'll highlight that in just a moment. Sfarim that are written in Bay Avidan. Now, Bay Avidan is, let's go with Rashi in terms of a description of what we're describing right now. Sfarim shekasvu lahem aminim lizvakech im Yisrael umakum shemezvakem sham karilei Bay Avidan. So, Bay Avidan is basically some sort of house of philosophy. It was a sophisticated bar, if you will, where basically there was debate that occurred between those that were faithful to the tradition in Torah Sinai and others who were not. Excuse me. And the Bay Avidam is where they met. And Sfarim of Bay Avidam. So in other words, you have a Sefer Torah written by these. Are we saving them or are we not saving them? So in Velav Rafia Biadei. Now, apparently, those that attended the Bay Avidam were not as caustic as intense as the Minim. Minim, the heretics, were really not only off the derech, but trying to subvert and bring other people with them. We're not describing that over here. We must be describing people who philosophically challenged, people who at least entertained other notions. They're not as radical as the Minim that we described earlier. And to the question that was asked from Rabbi Abahu. So you have a Sefer Torah that was written in Bay Avidam. Does it need to be saved from a fire? So in V'lav Rafi Biadei, he said yes, he said no, he wasn't sure. So Rav Lo Azal Bay Avidam. And now the Gemara is going to take a moment to discuss. So this Bay Avidam that we're describing right now, so was it attended, was it not attended? So the Gemara is going to tell us the practice of various Amoraim. So this Bay Avidam existed in the days of the early Amoraim, which is clear from the Gemara over here. So Rab didn't go. Lo Azal Bay Avidam, he didn't go to these houses of philosophy. He didn't want to engage in these kinds of discussions. V'kosha kein l'Bay Nitzrfu. And for sure he didn't want to go to Bay Nitzrfu, a house that was not it was not for philosophy, but it was in fact for Avodah Zarah. That for sure he wouldn't go to. Shmuel Bay Nitzrfu L'Azil Bay Avidam Azim. Now Shmuel's position was slightly more open. Shmuel would not go to the Bay Nitzrfu, that was a house of Avodah Zarah, but he would in fact go to the Bay Avidan. Amar Le Rava, my Tamar Lo Asis Le Bay Avidan. Now we're moving a couple generations later amongst the Amoraim. Rava was asked the same question, why don't you go to Bay Avidan? So they want you to go to this philosopher's house. Why don't you engage in discussion, debate regarding religion? So Amar Lehu Dikla Pana Ika Ba'orcha V'Kashuli. So Rava makes up an excuse. You know, there's a palm tree that's on the way. It's really hard for me to get around the palm tree. Clearly an excuse. And Ni'akre, and they called him out on it. They said, well, why don't you just simply uproot the palm tree? Duchte Kashule. So he says, no, it's going to make a hole in the ground, and then I have to get through the hole. I just can't do it. And as Rashi points out over here, Rashi writes towards the bottom, right? Rashi Dibra Maschal, Amrle Ni'akre Kashule Duchte. Shitesham Guma. Right? There's going to be a hole over there. Inami. Nisiso v'kashli recho, or maybe it's the odor. V'chol zesh ayum icharim rava rava. Now, in terms of the positions of Rav and Rava, who would not go to the Beis Avidan? So Rashi writes over here. So Rav Rava meleches lebe Avidan shem mitoch sheisvachu yamdu alem v'yargum. Because what happens in the Beis Avidan is it wasn't just a philosophical debate, but these are people who also had political power as well. And if they feel that they really got embarrassed in the debate, so then your life is going to be ended. And so it can result in death, right? We go forward in history, all right? Centuries later, the Ramban and his vikuchim and his arguing with the church in terms of psukim in Tanakh. So and he had to flee. So anyway, so comes out clearly over here that Rav and Rava were just simply afraid for their lives. That's why they didn't go. And so they made up excuses in terms of why they didn't go. Back to the Gemara. Mar Bar Yosef Amar Ana Minayhu. Mar Bar Yosef says that, now literally the words means that I'm one of them, but it just simply means that I have a relationship with them. So Ana Balam Estafina Minayhu. And I'm not afraid. And Zimna Chada Azo Bala Sakune. But the Gemara says, but his confidence in his relationship was slightly overconfident. In fact, at one point in time, so there was a debate, it was a heated debate, and his life was in jeopardy. The Gemara doesn't give us any more details, but clearly over here, we are discussing, the discussions became too heated, and his life was in jeopardy. Okay. At this point in time, the Gemara, just I'll highlight this, but I'm not going to make too much of it right now. So there are missing portions of the Gemara, Chesronos HaShas, right? We've discussed this many times throughout Shas, and that is that the Gemara went through a censorship. A number of Gemaras that are cited are anti-early Christianity, and so when the church obviously had tremendous powers, and the Gemaras were being studied, so it was inflammatory. And so what was done is that the Gemaras were censored, where any statements that were really caustic were removed. We have the Gemaras that were taken out, meaning they were censored in that they were taken out of the standard Gemara. They were still collected. You can actually get your hands on it. It's called Chesronos HaShas. At this point in time, the Gemara has omitted a couple of lines that are extraordinarily caustic towards the early Christian practices. And so it's pretty clear. I don't have the actual citation of it on my hand right now. There are many places where you could see it. But it's pretty clear over here that the references over here are to the very early Christianity. And that is what the Gemara over here is addressing. Okay, and with that stated, okay, made mention of it, let's continue. Ima Shalom Divasai de Rabbi Elazar, Achle de Rabbi Gamliel. So a woman, her name was Ima Shalom. So she was the wife of Rabbi Elazar. She was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. And Habeahu Philosopha Bishivavuse, she had a philosopher that was living in her community. Now you can already see, by the way, the cryptic nature in which the Gemara writes this. She had a philosopher, meaning you could put that in quotes. In fact, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes philosopher min, it's a heretic. So probably the Gemara here is making reference to what we described earlier. And to have a shakel shma, dilo mekabel shofta. Now, this particular heretic, he touted himself as somebody who does not accept any kind of bribes. As now we're on the top of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. Abo l'achuche bay. So they basically wanted to make a mockery of him because they knew he was just full of nonsense. So Aili Le Shraga de Dahava Va'azel. So what they did is they brought up a golden candelabria. Lekame Amr Le Beina de Niflagili Benichse de Meineshe. And she said, look, here's the story. Story is that we just had the death of my father, and we have a tremendous estate. And the estate's going to be divided, and I want to divide it with my brother. And so, but what I want is an equitable distribution of the estate, where I'm going to get 50%. Now, the Torah, of course, gives none of the estate over to the daughter in the case where there is a son. So, but she's demanding that this judge give her 50%, and she gives him a bribe. She gives him the candelabra. So, and as a bribe. So, Amar Lahu. So he says to them, plugu. So he says, okay, divide it. Meaning with the bribe that he already accepted. So then his ruling is that the estate should be divided. Half should go to the son and half should go to the daughter. So Amar Lake Sivla b'makom bara bartaloteros. So he said, wait one second. The Torah says that when there's a son, the daughter does not inherit. So Amar Lake minyuma degelisa me'archon. So he said as follows. This is now the judge. The judge that can't be bribed, although he currently is being bribed, from the day that the Jewish people were exiled, is natit araisa de Moshe v'isav de safra chrita. The Torah of Moshe now has been taken away, and I give you now a new Sefer Torah. So, in the context of what we discussed, everyone can hopefully see clearly what we're describing right now. Given a new Sefer Torah, v'ksiv bei brau barta kechadin yartun, and it says that the son and the daughter are going to be inheriting equally. So this new set of laws is telling us that equitable distribution of the estate between son and daughter. And now the next day, the son comes in and he hands the judge a donkey prior to the case being discussed further. And so basically, he's also giving a bribe. In fact, he's giving a bigger bribe. Okay, the donkey is more, must have been that the donkey was worth more than the candelabra. Anyway, so he gave him a donkey, a chamer luba, a Libyan donkey. So Amar Lahu, shefilt the sefer de sifra. V'ksibbe ana lo lemifches min ha-raisa de Moshe asisu, v'lo lo sufish ha-raisa de Moshe asisu. Uksibbe b'makubra bartolo teirus. So now the judge says, look, I have to reconsider. Because if you look at the end of this new series of laws, it says that I didn't come to add to the Torah of Moshe, and I didn't mean to detract from the Torah of Moshe, and the law is that the son inherits and the daughter doesn't inherit. Okay, so he changed his tune simply because he got a better bribe from the son. So Amalei, now keep in mind, by the way, they weren't really interested in the estate. They just want to expose them that this judge was totally bribable. So Amalei, so she says back to the judge, Nohor Nareich Kishraga, right? How's that light going in your house? Meaning she's reminding him that she bribed him with the candelabra. So she asked him a question, right? The lighting in your house, how's it doing? So Amalei Rabbi Gamliel, Asacham Obato Shishraga. So Rabbi Gamliel says, that's so funny. You know what must have happened? The donkey must have kicked over the light. Obviously making reference to his bride. So anyway, all this was just basically an exposure of this philosopher. Rashi describes this min. So even though he prided himself on being above bribery, he wasn't above bribery. In fact, he loved bribery, which whoever can give him the most, that's the direction he went. And so the Gemara over here now is putting on full display the amount of animus that existed between those who preserved the Mesorah and the groups that did not preserve the Mesorah. Okay, and why are we here? How do we get all the way over here? Because the Braisa touched on Sfarim Shalminim. The Gemara then used it as an opportunity to discuss what do you do with Sfarim Shalminim, written by heretics, and then the Sifrei de Bei Avidan. Right, in these philosopher houses where ideas were bantered about back and forth, challenged back and forth. So what if you have a sefer that's written over there? What's the status over there? And so the Gemara talked about in somewhat more detail the story behind these philosophers. We're continuing now in the Gemara. We're going to go back to our discussion regarding the Mishnah umivnei ma'ein karin. Now, why is it that we do not read from Ksuvim? Go back to the Mishnah that we learned in at the beginning of the parak in yesterday's daf. So it says, "Umimei ma'ein karin behem." Why is it that we do not read ksuvim in a bittul beis hamedrash? Because of bittul beis hamedrash. And let's just quickly go over the Rashi that we saw yesterday's daf. Critical Rashi in terms of what does that mean? Bittul beis hamedrash. Rashi quotes one of his rabbein, Rabbeinu Alevi, "Amar dafilu yichidim ein karin behem kedektani taima mishum bittul beis hamedrash demashke liba." That what it's going to happen, what it's going to do is it's going to draw your heart. Meaning the ksuvim are engaging in terms of stimulating thought. It has the Megillus. It has Mishlei. Right? It has many things that are just very stimulating. And on Shabbos, there was a halacha shir. And in that halacha shir, so what to do, what not to do, otherwise known as halacha. Now, in terms of priorities, so the priority should be first halacha, and then the philosophy, the Sefer Mishlei, the Megillos, but that only comes after the halacha. And so priorities in learning dictates that, demands that the halacha be learned before the ksuvim. And that's why ksuvim are not to be learned and not to be studied on Shabbos. Now, is there any time in Shabbos where Ksuvim is allowed to be learned? That is going to be our Gemara's discussion right now. We're now continuing in the Gemara. Kuf Tezayin Amud Bey is about a third of the way down at the two dots. So Rav here, in the first way we're presenting the Machlokas of Rav and Shmuel, is of the opinion that you're not allowed to learn Ksuvim, but that's only in the morning before the Shabbos meal. Talking about the day of Shabbos, before the Shabbos meal. But after it, now the way he describes it is, Shalob is Zman Beis HaMedrash. But the way Rashi understands it over here is that Zman Beis HaMedrash is before you eat. So that's where the halacha shir was being said. After the main Shabbos meal on Shabbos day, so then there would be no shir. Rashi over here, really interesting. He writes, Shalom is my base of mitzvah la'achar achila, lo darshu mishum shechrus. Because what happens is that during the Shabbos meal, so it would be accompanied by drink. And there would be mild intoxication. And you're not allowed to learn halacha when you are mildly under the influence. And so therefore, when now after you have the main meal, so you're not going to be having a halacha shir, perfect time to learn ksuvim. That's Rav's understanding. Shmuel amar afilu shalom bezman beisa mezushin karin. Now Shmuel says that no, that the learning of ksuvim on Shabbos cannot be done neither before the main meal nor after the main meal. Eni the Gemara says, now is that true? V'anada asrei de Shmuel hava. Now Narada was the community of Shmuel, but Narada paske sidra b'ksuvim b'minchasa de Shabbasa. So there was a minag in Narada, is that mincha would be accompanied with ksuvim. So they were learning ksuvim at Shabbos mincha. So Ela Yidma Hachidma. So the Gemara says, okay, so the way we originally presented the machlokas is not good because Shmuel's position and the practice in Naharda, the town of Shmuel, was inconsistent. So the Gemara says, so we're going to have to go back and we're going to lay out a different way to understand the machlokas of Rav Shmuel. So, Rav over here, as now we are going in round number two, Rav is of the opinion that b'makom beis hamedrash in shul, so there you cannot learn ksuvim, but if you're out of shul, so then you can learn ksuvim. Shmuel amar bein b'makom beis hamedrash, bein shalob b'makom beis hamedrash, b'zman beis hamedrash in karin, Shalob is man based on measures karen. Shmuel says it's not a function of location of where you are, but what time of day is it? If it's before the main meal, then the main Shabbos meal, so where halacha is learnt, so there you're to spend your time with halacha, not with ksuvim. Afterwards, you can learn ksuvim. The az de Shmuel atame, and the Gemara says now we have consistency because in Harda paske sidra de ksuvim and minchas de Shabbos that there would be a seder of ksuvim being learnt in the shuls on Shabbos mincha. In the town of Narada, and now in the second way we presented the machlokes, Rav Shmuel. So this now conforms perfectly with the position of Shmuel that before the Shabbos meal that you learn halacha not ksuvim. After the Shabbos meal, then you learn ksuvim. That is the second round of the way the machlokes presented. Rav Ashi Amar LaOlam Kedamar Mikara. Rav Ashi says I really like the first way we said it better, and the first way we presented the machlokes. Ushmuel Kerav Nechemya. Now as far as Shmuel is concerned. Shmuel was really espousing the viewpoint of Rabbi Nechemya. The Tanya we learned on the following brisa. Alpha Bishamra Kitzvei Kodesh and Korn Behem. Kitzvei Kodesh, you're not allowed to read on Shabbos. Aval Shonim Behem V'Dorshim Behem. But what you could do is you could do Iyun in Ksuvim. You could do analysis of the Ksuvim. Meaning not just sitting and reading them, but reading them and really studying them with Midrashim and with analysis. So V'Dorshim Behem. Nitzrach Lepasuk Mevi V'Roa Bo. And if you need one of the psukim and ksuvim, so you obviously look it up. Amram Nechemya Mimnei Ma'amru Kisvei Kodesh Ein Korin Behem. Now that is the shita of the Tanakama. But here in the Braisa, Amar Rebbe Nechemya, I'll give you a totally different approach in terms of why it is that we don't learn ksuvim on Shabbos. Kedeshi Yomru Bekisvei Kodesh Ein Korin Bekoshkem Vishtari Hajotos. It is instructive to the people. Because with a ban of learning ksuvim on Shabbos, this is Rebbe Nechemya's approach. With a ban of learning ksuvim on Shabbos, people will say, if we're not allowed to read ksuvim, which is part and parcel Tanakh, a third of Tanakh, not quantity, but in terms of sections, a third of Tanakh we're not allowed to learn on Shabbos, we're certainly not allowed to read Shtari Hejotos. And so the only reason Rabbi Nechemya says that ksuvim is banned on Shabbos is not because of priorities in learning, but it has to do with the fact that the on Shabbos people are to be educated and taught that they're not allowed to read the Shtari Hejotos. The best way to instruct them is tell them, hey, you're not even allowed to read Ksuvim. And then the understanding will come that if I can't read Ksuvim, I certainly can't read Shtari Hejotos. The question obviously begs, what are Shtari Hejotos? Rashi over here writes, right before the Gemara, in the Rashis, Shtari Hejotos, Kigon Shachashbonos, O, Igros Ashluchos, Limso Chefetz. So Rashi says, either some sort of business ledger, or letters that are written, limso chepes, literally meaning to find an item, but basically letters that are written from across seas. right? The correspondence, so that cannot be read on Shabbos. So Rashi over here, it seems to indicate pretty clearly that on Shabbos, as part of what cannot be part of your reading material, is that you cannot be reading any kind of correspondence. Meaning, on Shabbos, it should be strictly, exclusively Torah, and not even ksuvim, and it goes without saying, not anything else as well, even basic correspondence. For much more on this discussion of what one can and cannot read on Shabbos, and Rashi's position that it even includes correspondence as well, so you could start with the second Tosfos on our Amud, where he cites Rashi, vehemently opposes the opinion of Rashi in terms of correspondence. The right, Tosfos feels correspondence is perfectly okay, and a number of other interesting things in this Tosfos. Reading world history also is included in Tosfos as well. This is a much larger discussion, just highlighting the Mar Makamos in terms of where you could see it. Let's start the next Mishnah. Masilin Tik HaSefer Im HaSefer. Back to the question of salvaging the contents of a house. Again, there's a limit in terms of what you can take out. Right now, we are discussing the Kitzvei HaKodesh, and the Mishnah tells us you can also take the cover as well, the mantle. So Masilin Tik HaSefer Im HaSefer, you can take out the mantle, but take out Tfilin Im HaTfilin. You can also take out the Tfilin as well, and the bag of Tfilin, V'afal Pi Sheyesh Besochan Ma'os. And even if the Tfilin has money in it, and that obviously would be Muksa. But because I'm saving the tefillin, so therefore the money that's in the tefillin bag can be taken as well. Ulehechem masil nasan. Now where can it be taken? Lamavui sheinu mafulash. It can be taken to a mavui, but as long as the mavui is surrounded by three walls. So that means to say that the mavui is in fact a reshus yachid. Now there's no eruv that is combining the mavui with the chatzer in the houses, and so yes, there is a violation of a din derabanan, but you're doing so for the purpose of saving a sefer Torah. Ben Becerra Omer Af L'Mefulash. Ben Becerra is of the opinion that you can even go to a Mavui that's Mefulash, that's opened up on both ends. The Gemara later will discuss the position of Ben Becerra. Okay, well, this is going to be our pausing point, where we're going to be starting the Gemara tomorrow, discussing a topic in Halacha that seemingly has no relevance whatsoever to our Mishnah. We're going to be discussing on Seder night, when preparing the Karban Pesach. Well, the shechting of the Karban Pesach is on the afternoon of the 14th, but by preparing the Karban Pesach, exactly what can you do if the 14th falls out on a Shabbos? What can you do with the Karban Pesach? How much of it can you flay open? A Pesachim discussion, a Kachim discussion, having seemingly nothing to do with our discussion, and going well into tomorrow's daf, the Gemara is going to connect the two. We'll see that in tomorrow's daf. Let's quickly recap our daf today. We started off our daf by talking about the sefer by the parsha by Hibin Soa, which is a sefer bifnei atzmo. It's its own independent sefer, noted in the Torah because you have brackets bracketing it off that section. The brackets are in the form of nun hafuchim, upside down nuns. A discussion in the Gemara in terms of why you have it bracketed off. Two opinions. One is because it is displaced. It belongs back in the Degalim when describing the formation of the Jewish people. That's really what the Parsha should be, but it was taken out of there, put over here. The second position is that it's a Sefer Bifnei Atzmo, it's Chashu Bifnei Atzmo, and that's why it's bracketed off. The Gemara notes that there is an opinion of Rosh Shmuel Bar Nachman, who is of the position that there are not Chamisha Chumshi Torah, but rather there are seven books of the Torah. So how do you get to seven? So as we explain, because he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rebbe, that the Vayihi Ben Soa is a Parsha Bifnei Atzmo, so Sefer Bamidbar is not one Sefer, but rather comes out to be three Sfarim. Why is Vayihi Ben Soa, according to the first opinion, why is it displaced, why is it put over here? In order to create a break between Paranius and Paranius. And we spent some time this morning describing what exactly were the Paranius before Vayihi Ben Soa, versus the Paranius that were after Vayihi Ben Soa. We cited Rashi, we quoted Tosfos. Next, we went back to the discussion of what could be salvaged from a burning house on Shabbos. What about the margins of a Sefer Torah, where I don't have the letters, but I just simply have the margins? Do they have the status of Kitzvei HaKodesh? A discussion on the Amud Aleph, no clear conclusion. Sfarim of Minim, do they have any Kedusha? The answer is no. Are they saved from a burning house on Shabbos? The answer is no. The Sefer Torah that are written by Minim. And then some Tanayim go much further than that. Not just allowing the Sifrei Minim to be burned, but actively to burn them, even the Shem Hashem that's written in them, they have simply no Kedusha because of the authorship of who wrote them. Sifrei Debe Avidan, on the bottom of the Amud Aleph. We discussed these houses of philosophy, where ideas were exchanged, debated, and some Amoraim went there, some Amoraim did not go there, and even those of the Amoraim that went there, it wasn't, the Gemara says, it wasn't the wisest decision. It's a dangerous place. You lose a debate. You don't just lose your debate. You may lose your life as well. And then the Gemara discussed some of these philosophers. We could put that in quote. So some of these philosophers, one particular one who believed that he was above bribery, and various Tanaim showed Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Elazar's sister, Rabbi Gamliel's sister, together with Rabbi Gamliel, who exposed that this particular philosopher was not as virtuous as he himself reported that he was. He did accept bribes. And finally, our last discussion today, the reading of Ksuvim on Shabbos. Is one allowed to read Ksuvim at any point on Shabbos? The Mishnah said no. The opening Mishnah of our Perek said no because of Bittel Beis HaMedrash. And the Amoraim says, is there ever going to be a time where it's allowed? Rav, there were two versions of the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. Rav is of the position that if it's before the main meal where Halacha is supposed to be learned, prioritize Halacha and learn the Ksuvim after lunch. Shmuel's of the position, no Ksuvim to be learned whatsoever. Not before, not after. There was a second version of the way the Machlokas is presented. The Gemara notes that in Shmuel's town, they did have a Seder in Ksuvim Shabbos afternoon. Right? Perhaps, we discussed this much earlier in the Masechta. Perhaps there was even a Haftorah that was of Ksuvim that was added as well. But in Shmuel's town, that's what they did. That's inconsistent with Shmuel's position. The way it was first appeared, the Gemara says no. The Shmuel over there was not espousing his own viewpoint; he was espousing the viewpoint of Reb Nechemia. Reb Nechemia says that you're not learning Ksuvim on Shabbos, having nothing to do with priority in learning, but rather having to do with the idea that it is educational. It tells the people that if we're not studying Ksuvim, we're for sure not allowed to study Shtari Hedyotos. What are Shtari Hedyotos? So this morning we went through Rashi inside, and I just simply highlighted Tosfos, who is vehemently opposed to Rashi's Peshat.